From KLW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area. North Oakland.
Temescal.
Alamo Square.
I live in Noe Valley.
Corona Heights.
Western Addition.
Coming up, we'll walk in the shoes of San Francisco Sheriff Ross Mercurimi.
Good morning. How are you?
Nice to see you as well.
We spend the day with the man who narrowly kept his job after a much-publicized domestic violence dispute with his wife.
People in the city would either come knocking on my door, because after a while, everybody knew where we lived, you know, or just kind of find me and said, you got to fight.
And we'll talk with one of the organizations that called for Mercurimi's removal from office.
When one of our city's top law enforcement officials calls domestic violence or an allegation of domestic violence a private family matter, we see that as a time where we need to speak up.
That's coming up next on Cross Currents. Sheriff Ross Mercurimi is one of the most polarizing figures in San Francisco. Since moving to the city in 1984, he's gone from co-founding California's Green Party to graduating from the police academy and serving as a city supervisor. But on January 13, 2012, just 5 days after he was sworn in as San Francisco sheriff, Mercurimi was charged with domestic violence battery against his wife, Eliana Lopez.
This happened yesterday.
The main evidence in the case was this video from Mercurimi's wife, where she points to a large bruise on her right arm.
And this is the second time this is happening. And I tell Ross, I want to work on the marriage. We need help. I have been telling him we need help. And I'm going to use this just in case he wants to take you away from me. Because he did. He said that he's very powerful and he can do it.
That launched 10 months of a highly publicized domestic violence case in which Mercurimi ultimately pled guilty to false imprisonment, losing the right to see his wife and child for several months. He made public apologies.
I deeply and humbly apologize for my behavior and the pain it caused to my wife and son.
And agreed to attend weekly domestic violence batterers classes as well as perform 100 hours of community service. When it came to his job, there were hearings.
Good evening. I would like to call to order this special meeting of the San Francisco Ethics Commission, the continued hearing of the official misconduct proceedings relating to Sheriff Ross Mercurimi.
Where Mercurimi was at times greeted with applause from supporters. But there were also petitions from residents and women's rights activists demanding that Mercurimi be kicked out of office.
Any sheriff who has pled guilty to false imprisonment admitted under oath that he committed a violent act against his wife and that at the time he did it, he knew it was a crime, is not fit to be sheriff.
As a result, San Franciscans have strong opinions about the sheriff, including Mayor Ed Lee, who made his known when he suspended Mercurimi.
Sheriff Mercurimi's actions and confession of guilt clearly fall below these standards of decency and good faith, rightly required of all public officials.
But in October of 2012, the majority of the city's Board of Supervisors voted to keep Mercurimi in his job, and he's been at it ever since. So how does such a divisive public figure deal with the day-to-day problems of leading a department? KLW's Leela Day spent a day shadowing him to see what life is like for Ross Mercurimi as sheriff of San Francisco.
Inside City Hall on the fourth floor is the sheriff's office, where Ross Mercurimi works. Today he's agreed for his every move to be followed. I clip a mic on his tie and check the sound.
Okay, once more.
Ross Mercurimi, sheriff.
The sheriff is wearing a basic dark green suit. All of his clothes match, from the stripes of his tie down to his green argyle socks. His hair sort of sweeps back into an S-shaped wave that just settles naturally. On his right hip, near his brown leather belt, is a golden sheriff badge.
I wake up at about 5:45, 6 every morning. If I can muster the energy, and I've been good lately this new year, I go to the gym for about 45 minutes to an hour, thanks. Jet back home and just get ready for work, and I'm here in the office hopefully by 8 a.m.
Inside his office, shelves line the walls with legal books, criminal justice reports, and click-clack-moo, a book with a cow typing on a typewriter. It's one of his son's favorites.
It's really a great book. It's almost subversive. It's like, you have to read it to understand what I'm talking about, but it talks about the union labor rights. This is a little out, he's outgrown this, ABC, Fred and Ted from the Dr. Seuss by Peter Eastman. He knows this by heart, and he knows it both in English and Spanish, which is hilarious.
He slides the books back in place. It's 8:30, time for the daily meeting with his chief of staff, Kathy Gorwood, Undersheriff Ellen Brin, and Assistant Sheriff Paul Miyamoto.
You guys want to come in?
The sheriff sits behind a large wooden desk.
How are you today?
His team sits in front of him with papers in hand.
Give me your feedback, because I actually was doing some homework last night and I called somebody.
The department has a lot to oversee. They're responsible for the management of six county jails. They assist with tracking down people who have warrants out for their arrest. They're in charge of evictions. They have to be ready to aid the SFPD in case of an emergency. And on top of that, the department helps with the rehabilitation of inmates and ex-offenders.
If you think about it, up to about 50,000 people come through, have contact with the San Francisco County jail system in a given year.
But right now, the jail population in San Francisco is low. The average daily jail population has been around 1,600 people, one of the lowest counties in California. The sheriff leans over his desk and asks his team,
why do you think over the last year our jail population is so low?
No arrest.
That's one answer, no arrest. What's the other?
I think that they're less inclined to keep these folks in jail. And we've seen a significant decline in probation violations.
Leaning in closer, the sheriff props his hands under his chin.
That's great. Yeah. That's
great. Nodding in agreement, he adds,
and when crime occurs, and particular violent crime occurs, it's not usually first-time criminals. Unless they're juveniles or young and it's their first time, it's usually people that repeat. And so
they speed through the rest of the agenda. A restorative justice model in Oakland that made national news, shuttles for jail visitors.
Shelter so that people are not standing out in the cold or the rain, waiting to go in. So let's get that meeting set up.
Soon it's past 9 a.m., and it's time to hit the road. The sheriff scans his desk and pats his pockets.
I think I have everything I need.
Mercurimi's workday often consists of a lot of office work, revising proposals, working on budgets, and plugging into conference calls. But today he's got a packed schedule outside of the office. On the way out of City Hall, he greets almost everyone he sees.
Good morning. How are you?
Good morning,
sir. Nice to see you. Nice to see you as well. Stay warm.
I will.
Okay.
See
all right.
You, sir.
It's getting cold, so stay warm.
Once he's outside, the sheriff gets into the passenger side of a white sedan.
I kind of like the
name of the story. It is almost 9:45. We're going to the San Bruno jail. It's about a 20-minute ride, right, Susan?
He normally drives alone, but today he's arranged for Susan Fahey, Sheriff Department spokeswoman, to drive, so he could talk to me about his job and his history.
My father's from Iran. Uh-huh. My grandparents, my mother's side, are Russian. So my father was a Shiite Muslim, and my mother is a Russian Jew. So I grew up sort of with both, but in one way to kind of mediate those interests, I also went to Jesuit school. So I kind of have an interfaith background.
Mercurimi was exposed to public service at a young age. He grew up with a single mom who worked with the Commission for Human Rights in Rhode Island. He headed west 29 years ago and landed in the Bay Area. Mercurimi graduated from the San Francisco Police Academy in 1996, and he knew he wanted a career in law enforcement.
But I already knew that I was a little bit different than most others with my kind of progressive or left political perspective. But I believe people of our perspective should be in law enforcement as much as I believe they should be in the military. I think it just helps round out perspective.
It was when Mercurimi left the department and began to work for the district attorney's office that he started to meet with more progressive policymakers. And this is where he realized he fit in. He worked for the district attorney for 9 years, then won a seat on the Board of Supervisors representing District 5, near the center of town, a place where there's a lot of crime and poverty.
I was appalled at how in the Fillmore District, as well as in other parts of San Francisco, both government, law enforcement, and community just seemed to be resigned to the fact that crime is always going to be the way it is, and the level of poverty in a very chic city like San Francisco goes, I think, unnoticed.
During this time, Mercurimi says he learned quite a bit from San Francisco's longest-serving sheriff, Michael Hennessy, who held his post for 32 years and endorsed Mercurimi before retiring. Hennessy completely redefined the role of the sheriff's department. He focused on education in the prison systems and more rehabilitation programs. Most jails in the U.S. didn't have such a progressive approach to incarceration. Mercurimi was elected to office in November 2011 and planned to continue his predecessor's work.
Until this past year, it was a little bit interrupted.
What he calls an interruption was one of the biggest political scandals in recent San Francisco history. Mercurimi made national headlines for an incident in which he bruised the arm of his wife, Ileana Lopez. He pled guilty to a count of misdemeanor false imprisonment and was sentenced to 3 years probation, fined $590, and ordered to attend 1 year of counseling and parenting classes. Mayor Ed Lee suspended the sheriff for nearly 9 months without pay, until an ethics committee reinstated him last October. I asked him why he fought so hard to remain sheriff of San Francisco.
Well, I was elected sheriff. The people had elected me, and I very much wanted and vow to right any wrong and yet still be able to demonstrate that that does not disqualify me. And in fact, I think enhances my ability to be, I think, the kind of sheriff people would like me to be. And in my lowest point, which were many, a lot of people in the city would either come knocking on my door, because after a while everybody knew where we lived, you know, or just kind of find me and said, you got to fight. You know, it's not for yourself or just your family, but it's for us too. We want you to be in that office, you know, and grow. And I appreciated that. I'll never forget it.
That's San Francisco Sheriff Ross Mercurimi speaking with KALW's Leela Day. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Holly Kernan. Sheriff Mercurimi did have many supporters, as he described, but there were also many vocal opponents to his reinstatement. In fact, the majority of San Franciscans polled did not want Mercurimi as sheriff after his conviction. And many women's rights activists spoke out against Mercurimi's reinstatement. Among them was Kathy Black, executive director of La Casa de las Madres, a local shelter for victims of domestic violence.
It defies common sense that a sheriff convicted of a domestic violence crime would then oversee the incarceration and rehabilitation of others convicted of these crimes. I am concerned about the message it'll send to survivors and batterers if one of our city's top public safety officials is allowed to remain in office after admitting to a domestic violence crime.
We're joined now by Jamie Cox, who's outreach director and volunteer coordinator for La Casa de las Madres. She says that this past year, calls to La Casa have gone up over 20%, and part of the reason is increased awareness about the issue. I asked her to explain why, as an organization, La Casa chose to take a stand on the Mercurimi case.
We felt compelled to speak out that, you know, one of our top public safety officials in San Francisco admitted to having committed a violent act against his wife, admitted under oath, and admitted that at the time he knew it was a crime, was convicted of a domestic violence-related crime, and we felt that San Francisco deserved better from its sheriff. And along the way, our community was hearing a lot of messages minimizing the abuse. And so we wanted to make sure that, you know, these instances that are in the media are just the tip of the iceberg in terms of the prevalence of abuse. What actually gets reported is just a small fraction of people's experiences. So we want to make sure that people that are out there in their homes feeling alone, feeling isolated, being told that it's their fault, that no one will care, that they hear that there is help available, that they're not alone. So that the person in that leadership position should be a reflection of our community's response. And those are the messages that we want our community to hear from its leaders.
And you had a Mercury-inspired billboard that you erected last February. Tell us what that looked like and why you mm-hmm. did that.
The billboard read that domestic violence is never a private matter.
And so this is referring to something that Ross Mercurimi said at the mm-hmm. time, that this mm-hmm. is a private family matter.
Right, right. So it was in response to that message, which has been used historically to minimize and to keep people silent. It's a phrase, a very particular phrase that the anti-domestic violence community and La Casa has worked for years to stop, you know, that belief that it is just a private family matter. Again, this is something that the public needs to take seriously, that people need to know that there are safe places for them to get help if they're experiencing it. And so when that was said, we felt that it was important to counteract that with the message that it isn't a private family matter. It's a crime. It's a public health concern. It's something that we as a community should all take seriously and pay attention to. And so the billboard also included our 24-hour hotline number for those that might need, you know, that might be feeling unsafe or concerned about their relationship and want to talk to someone.
So let me be the libertarian in me here that's saying, well, but his wife, Eliana Lopez, didn't want help, wasn't seeking help.
Right. What we know is that some, you know, there are different numbers, but some 78% or so of victims do recant or choose not to cooperate with law enforcement. I can't speak to her situation or her choices, but that's just sort of the data we have more broadly. And there are so many reasons why that might happen. You know, for some, there may be a fear of retaliation. They may be experiencing emotional manipulation around you know, to create sympathy for their person that they love and they care about and don't want to see, you know, go to jail or, you know, face repercussions. So there can be a lot of reasons for that. And I don't intend to sort of speak for her specifically. But I think, you know, our system is set up in a way, the criminal justice system is set up such that specifically, survivors of domestic violence don't have to participate. They don't have to cooperate with law enforcement or choose to press charges. It's the state. It's a crime against the state, so that process can happen without that person having to testify against their loved one, et cetera.
Well, I think when many of us think about domestic violence, we think about physical battery. Do you include emotional abuse when you, what's your definition of domestic violence?
Absolutely. So domestic violence is an escalating pattern in which one person exerts control over their partner. And there's a lot of different ways that control can manifest. So absolutely, we think of it as a number of things that can include emotional, verbal, sexual, financial, physical abuse, as well as things like isolation, you know, really preventing someone from seeing friends or family or from seeking services or keeping them physically in the home, preventing them from working, you know, intimidation and threats.
It's just hard to wrap my head around a definition that's that broad, mm-hmm. and it feels like It's hard to know what's the line between somebody being a jerk for a day or an hour or a minute and a pattern of abuse.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. And that's really where we would look at the pattern piece, the escalating pattern. Domestic violence, generally speaking, and every situation is different, but it often happens in a cycle. So a cycle of, you know, sort of what you might hear is described as the hearts and flowers or the honeymoon phase, where things might feel really good and positive, and there are those bonds of love and commitment, and oftentimes coming after that, a period of tension building where you might hear someone say, and we hear this a lot, like, it feels like I'm walking on eggshells all the time, where any little thing I say or do might sort of set something off. And again, that doesn't have to be something physical. And, you know, the way that our legal system and law enforcement defines domestic violence is different from our definition, right? But I'm speaking for La Casa when I say that we define it as an escalating pattern of control in which one person has greater power in the relationship. So there's an imbalance of power that can be used to manipulate and coerce and intimidate.
We're speaking with Jamie Cox, who's the Outreach and Volunteer Coordinator at La Casa de las Madres. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Do you think that perpetrators of domestic violence can be reformed, can be cured?
I do. I think it takes that person being totally committed to and ready to accept that they want to change their behavior, because we do believe that domestic violence is a learned behavior that someone has often learned over the course of their lifetime from various messages in various places. But that person really has to want to change their behavior and get very specific intervention for that. So that's where sort of the minimum of 52 weeks of batter intervention comes in, because it's been found that, you know, if this is a pattern of behavior that someone's learned over the course of their lifetime, you know, even 52 weeks is not a lot sort of to unlearn that behavior and really change the way that a person thinks and acts. So, yes, I do think it's possible. I also think that it's about that person then choosing to use the tools that that batter intervention program provides. So it's not as if, and you'll hear batter intervention program experts, you know, our partners at RSVP and other programs talk about how it's not as if the batter intervention program works or it doesn't work. It's about that individual choosing to utilize the tools that it provides. And if that happens, then yes, it can work. But there's a lot of things that have to be sort of in place for that person in terms of their readiness and acceptance and decision to change.
That's Jamie Cox, Outreach and Volunteer Coordinator with La Casa de las Madres, California's first shelter dedicated to women and children escaping domestic violence. If you or a loved one needs help, you can call La Casa's 24-hour crisis support hotline, 1-877-503-1850. And you can find more information about La Casa at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. And now we rejoin KALW's Leela Day as she spends a day with San Francisco Sheriff Ross Mercurimi. At this point, they've left Mercurimi's office in City Hall, and they're on their way to one of the sheriff's many off-site visits.
Sheriff Ross Mercurimi and I arrive at San Bruno Jail, which is about 10 miles south of San Francisco.
Good to see you.
Thank you.
All right, stay warm. So welcome to San Bruno.
We're going to make a right to the elevator that's taken out of service, and we're going to use the elevator.
Inside the jail, we pass through a series of locked doors, and we enter a long, narrow hallway. It's so brightly lit that looking up strains my eyes. We are in a section of the jail housing the Five Keys Charter School, a fully functioning high school for adults. We look through windows where we can see men in orange jumpsuits sitting at desks. Here, they're called clients, or students while they're in class. Their eyes scan the sheriff for a brief moment, and then their eyes fix right back on their teacher.
We step right in here to U.S. history. This is a history of the invasion.
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning.
So the challenge is to not let our emotions, our feelings, our animal instincts take over just because the question becomes hard.
The classes here are developed specifically for the jail population. In science class, they teach the biology of addiction. In computer class, they learn to make a resume. So far, Five Keys has awarded more than 300 diplomas.
And I would argue that stealing milk to feed your baby has a cost if you get caught.
No one seems surprised to see the sheriff walk into the classroom today. Mercurimi says he makes his rounds to the county jails at least a few times per month. We continue our tour. He wants to visit the English as a second language class.
Welcome.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Welcome.
Okay, so the brakes do what?
Stop the car.
Stop the car. And then what makes the car go?
Gas.
We return to the hallway and look at two small libraries where books were recently donated. Then we are led into a large room, or what they call a pod. It's an oval-shaped room with three floors lined with neatly kept jail cells. 48 orange-clad students are sitting in a large circle in the center of the room. Brad Reese is a former inmate and now an instructor in the Keys for Change program.
So this here is the restorative justice. We do these groups every Thursday, and it's an opportunity for the guys to do a little bit of artwork and put their values on a piece of paper and draw the word to the value that they value the most.
Mercurimi stands outside the circle listening. Each student takes a turn expressing what he wants to achieve in life. A trip to Ethiopia, becoming a better jet skier. The sheriff stands with his hands clasped behind his back, nodding with each hopeful story. Mercurimi tries to quietly slip out of the class for his next meeting. But before he can go, one student stops him and points out the high student-to-teacher ratio.
Just on your mind that we could really use some more staff in here?
It is. It very much is on our mind, and that's exactly what my task is to be an advocate on behalf of this department, and I promise you I'll be a very assertive advocate, right? Right. All right.
Again, Mercurimi tries to maneuver out of the class when another hand is raised.
It's hard to get visited because it's only one phone line, and our families can't get through all the time.
Yes, and this is something that, this is one of the reasons among many as to why I wanted to be sheriff, is that San Francisco is forward-thinking, but we need to do a better job in making it accessible and user-friendly for families and friends of those that are incarcerated.
This is exactly what the sheriff was talking about with his staff this morning.
Well, we're going to build a shelter system, among other things that we're going to do to improve this. I'm hoping that we also bring in video conferencing.
The sheriff finishes his thought, and then we leave. We walk through more heavy steel doors, outside through a part of the prison used for overflow, and up some more stairs into a room where deputies in tan uniforms are learning about their new field training program, the Virtra 180. It's like a giant video game with three wall-sized screens showing virtual crime scenes.
If you could just line up against the wall.
Sure.
Here, so.
Okay.
We're going to give you guys a demonstration of just a couple scenarios.
Just stay against the wall, please.
We stand in the cold, dark room with several deputies who are about to go through their training course.
He's going to get a Glock 17 Virtra converted pistol, which actually shoots out a laser projectile that's not visible.
In this scene, a shooter is on the loose who's threatening innocent civilians in an office building. The deputy points his simulated gun at the screen and starts his mission.
Please help! They just went in with guns! They're after George! You've got to do something! You've got to go help them!
Actors on the screens grab their sides, lying on the ground screaming while the deputy tries to find his target.
Hey, man, call over here. Call over here. Call over here. Tell my voice. Dispatch, shots fired, one suspect down. Dispatch, two suspects down. I don't know if there's more. Give us some more units over here. Keep code 33.
Go ahead and holster.
Well done. Right. Well done. Well done.
The lights come on. The deputy is asked a series of questions about his reactions to the scene.
Sergeant, thank you very much.
Sheriff.
Well done.
Sheriff Mercurimi, other members of the department, and I leave the room.
I'll never get over the intensity of that, no matter how many times I've seen it.
Mercurimi is obviously disturbed by what he's seen. The violence doesn't suit the personality of the man I've been spending the day with. He's been outgoing and friendly, easy to laugh, concerned about the cold weather. He doesn't even carry a gun.
The sheriff can carry a weapon if the sheriff elects to, but it's not required.
Sheriff Mercurimi was barred from carrying a weapon as part of his sentence for the false imprisonment charge.
Excellent.
My pleasure. Good to see you, sir.
As always.
And separately.
Well, I'll let you know.
We leave the jail and get back into the sedan.
All right.
That's KALW's Leela Day with San Francisco Sheriff Ross Mercurimi. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Holly Kernan. Today, we're spending a day with one of the city's most controversial figures, Sheriff Ross Mercurimi. A domestic violence dispute with his wife last year put Mercurimi's job in peril, divided the city's elected officials on the issue, and riled up a community that is fed up with domestic violence going unpunished. San Francisco trails most other Bay Area counties in prosecuting domestic violence cases. According to a public press investigation, the district attorney's office pursued just 28% of cases through to trial or plea bargain in the past 5 years. Sheriff Mercurimi's scandal shed new light on the issue. Last week, the Board of Supervisors approved over $600,000 to increase the prosecution of domestic violence cases. The funds will go to the District Attorney's Office and the Department on the Status of Women. But the question remains, how does a sheriff in the midst of so much controversy get back to business? We return to Lila Day's report as she tries to answer that question.
Oh, it's 11:20? Oh, I keep it fast. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
it's 11:20. I'm sorry. I always keep my watch fast.
I take the opportunity of the car ride to ask him about the possibility of a stop and frisk policy in the Bay Area.
I'm against it. I think it was unnecessary and poorly explained by the mayor or those who were advocating for it. I wasn't surprised that it didn't materialize.
Was that something that was discussed heavily within your office?
We were not consulted by the mayor on this, and a little surprised that an initiative of this magnitude was not launched more from a collective perspective.
The sheriff's lack of communication with the mayor's office has been well documented. But Mercurimi says that he works for the people of San Francisco, like the ones who rallied behind him when he was under fire. People he'd never known were backing him up. They brought food to his house, made Save Ross signs for him at the city hall, and cheered him on the streets. But even with the support, there seemed to be just as many people who wanted the sheriff out.
This is really hard.
Thank you.
But, you know, I will do everything I possibly can. Everything I possibly can. Even to the people who did not want me reinstated. To earn, I think, their consideration that I won't let them down as a sheriff.
The sheriff, who always made eye contact today, now stares down and wipes his eyes. His criminal prosecution was a public fight, and anti-domestic violence groups were outraged. Many still are. Yet the sheriff carries on with his job.
We're heading to the Women's Resource Center, so we're leaving San Bruno, going back towards the Hall of Justice.
The center is also run by the sheriff's department. It's a daytime treatment center offering programs for women who were just released from the San Francisco County Jail. We walk into a room where a large tree is painted on the wall, with a little girl swinging from one of the branches. The sheriff is trying to help the center teach classes in an unused jail kitchen.
That's why I really am glad that we're having this meeting, to revisit some things that had been on our menu, so to speak.
The sheriff sits on the edge of his seat. He's excited about the center running like a business. Someone suggests maybe they train as baristas and open a cafe.
I think it's a lovely idea.
When the meeting is over, Mercurimi heads into a large room where a cooking class just finished, and a handful of recently released women are having lunch. The sheriff joins them.
Oh, I'm having this amazing, I haven't eaten it yet, but rosemary chicken, potatoes, carrots, green beans, and looks like a Caesar salad, and it is delivered by the incredible talent of the women here who cook at the Women's Resource Center, Sheriff's Department.
We eat lunch and go. Outside, the sun is shining bright. The sheriff takes off his jacket.
So where are we going now, Sheriff?
We're going to Oak Grove, 70 Oak Grove. It's an alleyway where our community programs are housed, and we're passing on Bryan Street, the Hall of Justice.
But we don't get far before a woman who was in the center stops us.
Dude, I was waiting for you to finish eating.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I have a problem.
Tell me.
I have bipolar and depression issues.
Okay.
He tells her she should go back into the Women's Resource Center for help. I ask him about being stopped on the street, and he says,
it happens in, I mean, if it was less than 10 in a day, that would be a really light day. Really light day.
So how do you think your day's been going so far?
Great. I like it bam, bam, bam. Like, you know, on the clock, half hour, hour, I like it. These are the kind of days I like. And these are routine in many ways. I have to just alternate from our different properties because we really do cover quite a lot of territory.
For the rest of the walk, the sheriff tells me he considers himself spiritual. He meditates. He says he tries not to watch the news just before he goes to bed because all the negativity weighs heavy on his mind.
But I often wake up in the middle of the night, so I keep a tablet right beside my bed, and I'm always going through ideas that I feel like I just, you know, there's just an ongoing generator. But as Eliana, my wife, says, you got to quiet your mind. And so I try to practice that now, different ways.
We enter the building on Grove Street. The sheriff meets with the Community Programs Department and the executive director of the Five Keys Charter School, Steve Good. They talk about how they need to consolidate programs.
Maybe this speaks to a larger question of, do we need to make changes in this building?
And that is one of the items on your agenda.
I mean, do we need to break down walls or something in here? Do we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Departments are scattered throughout the city, and they could be working together. An hour later, the meeting ends, and we're headed back out toward the street.
Hi. How are you? Good. Stay warm. It's going to get cold.
It's 2:45. We're off to the Hall of Justice, where the sheriff will attend a muster. The roll call, where the sheriff deputies are assigned posts and given other updates.
Yeah, they're doing muster.
We're going to crash the muster.
Oh, all right.
All right. You guys want to crash?
He's not crashing.
Hey, guys. How are you?
These musters happen in five locations three times per day. So Mercurimi attends a different one every week.
Here, you are post 5, Mac Day.
Here, sir.
3, Chanson. 4, M. Here. 8, Chin.
15 minutes later, we walk back out to his car with his chief of staff, Kathy Gorwood, who has a cold.
Sheena, want to grab some tea over here?
I'm good, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
The heels of the sheriff's shoes are worn out from the concrete. He looks really relaxed as he walks down Bryant Street. The day is winding down.
I saw the deputy in the front eating candy corn. When I was a kid, I had this fixation for Brock's candy corn. Oh, God, I love that stuff.
His sleeves are rolled up, showing peeling skin on his forearms from a recent Venezuelan vacation. His cell phone is on mute. He says he's normally on the phone quite a bit, and normally he drinks a lot of coffee. But today he's chosen not to. We take a car for a quick ride to City Hall. The sheriff spots Supervisor John Avalos and gives him a warm handshake.
Hey, John.
Soon after, we enter the building and head back up to his fourth floor office. Mercurimi sits down at his desk. He nervously arranges pens, checks his phone, and runs his fingers through his hair. Suddenly, the day feels completely different as he responds to emails, phone calls, and deadlines. Behind him is a framed picture of him snuggling up to his son.
That's the day he was born. My wife, Ileana, we had a home birth with midwives, and I was just the co-pilot, you might say, but, I mean, that's Theo. Jesus, I mean, really, probably one of the best days of my life.
He tells me his son is in Venezuela on vacation with his wife. He says tonight he'll read some books to him via Skype, and he'll have dinner alone. And what's for dinner?
This is not going to be the answer that Ileana would want to hear or others because she's not here, but I had a healthy lunch, but I really like Trader Joe's mac and cheese, I just really have a craving for it because the weather's cold and I feel like some comfort food. I'm being honest, I'll probably eat Trader Joe's tonight.
After spending a day with Sheriff Ross Mercurimi, it's not surprising. His idea of a power lunch is sitting down with nonprofit organizations to find solutions to San Francisco's crime problems. In fact, at times the sheriff's department itself feels like a nonprofit organization, with constant talk about grants and budgets, partnerships and brainstorming. The department has a history of being one of the most revolutionary in the country, with a determination to remain that way regardless of who its sheriff is. He has a past that will shadow him forever. But it seems like he'll hold his ground no matter how shaky it is. In San Francisco, I'm Leela Day for Cross Currents.
We know that this is a controversial issue, and we want to know where you stand. I've already received angry messages from people who didn't think we should give airtime to the sheriff. So chime right in by calling 415-264-7106. Just leave us a message at 415-264-7106, and we'll try to get your voice on the air. And that's it for today's Cross Currents from KALW News. You can hear all of our stories at kalw.org. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. Casey Miner is our senior editor. Our managing editor is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Also thanks to Mary Willis for her help in producing today's show. For Cross Currents, I'm Holly Kernan.